Brought to you by North Memorial Health, where customers are treated like family. That means a big smile when you walk in the door and making sure your visit is as pleasant as possible. It's just like your family treats you. Find your healthy family at northmemorial.com/family.
Welcome to another episode of the Access Vikings podcast. My name is Andrew Kramer, joined here by Ben Gessling and Michael Rand of the Star Tribune. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Andrew, how you doing?
Doing pretty well. Wednesday of this week, I had a Detroit Lions week for the Minnesota Vikings back at home.
Hey, I got to sit up.
First of, yes, please, posture.
Yeah.
We'll talk about how Kyle Sloter was no slouch when he was here.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Sloter being the number two quarterback for the Detroit Lions this week.
Too.
Play away.
The ninth quarterback the Lions have had on their roster as Matthew Stafford deals with a reported back injury that should keep him out again for this week. David Blau, is that how you pronounce his
name?
Seems
like that's what we're going with, yeah.
Is probably going to get a second start, the former Purdue quarterback who went undrafted. So we'll talk about Sunday's matchup, but mainly storylines about the Vikings. Xavier Rhodes, Dalvin Cook, Kirk Cousins in this offense, and a missed opportunity, their latest missed opportunity on Monday night in Seattle. I think the topic of the day, though, and of the week, and maybe for Vikings fans, the season has been the pass defense and Xavier Rhodes.
Yeah, he talked today a little bit, at least, at length, I guess.
He talked a lot today
about just, you know, how the year has been frustrating for him, that he's, you know, working to get better. I don't think he was particularly testy. He was pretty forthcoming, I felt like, but it didn't seem like a guy that had a whole lot of answers either to what's been amiss. You look at the Pro Football Focus rankings, he's like close to last among cornerbacks right now. That's just like a place we're not accustomed to seeing him. I mean, he had more struggles the other night in Seattle, and now he's going against Detroit, where Marvin Jones did a lot of his damage against him in that. Yeah, a lot of his touchdowns were against Xavier in that four touchdown game.
All
so
of them?
Yeah, two of them. Because I think one was on Mike Hughes, one was on Waynes. Waynes missed a tackle,
right,
I think,
right,
on the first one.
But it's just, it's weird. Like, we've been talking about this narrative all year. Like this is a guy who, you know, he's not 34. You know, he's, 29. Like, this isn't a point where you should see a fall off the cliff decline, but it's kind of what we've seen this year.
Well, and I mean, yes, he's 29, and that's not ancient, but has played an awful lot of snaps in that time. And whether we're at the point where physically he's declining or whether it's just kind of getting in his own head mentally, it's hard to say definitively, but it has been noticeable to watch how that role has changed in the sense that he's not shadowing guys anymore. They have played him in press coverage, I think, less this year than they often do. Now, that goes game to game. I mean, that's not always going to be the same, but I think a lot of times when he is in press, and especially when he's shadowing a guy, it's, I worry about this, and that's it. I don't have to deal with anything else in terms of how we fit into the pattern matching stuff they like to do a lot of times, and I think that's ultimately probably what happened Monday night on that play, was he thought he had safety help and he could play to his help, and it turned out obviously he did not, because Harrison Smith was up on the line of scrimmage, and then he was trailing the receiver, David Moore, and then give up the touchdown. So it seemed like the role has changed a little bit. It seemed like he, you know, all those snaps over the years, maybe it's all adding up. It's been quite the change to watch, though.
Yeah, when Xavier Rhodes was at his best, he was following receivers. They just would say, hey, here's your guy for pretty much the whole game. Go cover him. And that was an easy assignment where he didn't have to think much, could play fast. Then you see the penalties this year, and you see him kind of get backed off a little bit as maybe as a response. I'm not sure. But let's just detail what Rhodes said. I mean, he starts off with an apology just for the outburst. After the 60-yard touchdown, he goes to the sidelines. He's kind of slamming his helmet. He's doing a bunch of things like that. He knocks a water bottle out of somebody's hands. He yells at Zimmer. He apologizes for what he said to Zimmer.
Yeah. Shoved Anthony Barr in the chest when Barr, I think, was trying to explain the call, it looked like, on the sideline.
Okay, yeah. So just all those things, and he had to apologize. He said to my family too. Like, he took this very seriously and tried to own up for not only that, but for the season as a whole. And I'd asked him, well, was that frustration born out of just that 60-yard touchdown you gave up, or was it more than that? And he said, you know, it's what we've been doing all season. It's just the ups and downs that they've gone through as a pass defense and him individually. And talking about what he's going through, I asked, was it physical or mental? And one thing that stood out to me was he had said, well, you guys ask me after every game how I played, and you know.
Yeah.
And the between the lines of that is then he has to say how he played. And I think mentally he's just in a bind right now.
So here's something, I'm just reading through the transcript of this here, and he said something very interesting here. He said, "I've been battling some things, but that's no excuse. It's no excuse. When I'm out there on that field, everything I'm battling has to go away. I have to go out there and play for the guy beside me because I know if I mess up like I messed up on that one play, that's what it's going to lead up to. I've been in this league for a while, 7 years, and I should know that. It shouldn't come to a point where I'm just figuring that out. I know now what I need to work on, what I need to do."
So then, yeah, that's when I followed up, battling through things, physical or mental. And then did he say both?
A little bit of both, he did.
He said all around. The quote was all around. It's a hard season. Y'all ask me every time, hey, Xavier, how do you think you played this week? Y'all know. It's just that. Me being the guy that I am each and every day, working on my craft and not getting the results I want, of course you're going to be down on yourself. You ask any player that puts so much work and time into their craft, that's how they're going to feel. Like I said, I tell my guys each and every day, I'm never going to give up. I'm always a fighter, and that day is going to turn. That switch is going to flip, and when it does, it's over. I'm just waiting on that moment.
Now, he hasn't been on an injury report recently
at
all.
No, and he's been healthier, I think.
Now, he did get knocked out of that game briefly.
He did.
He did.
Maybe he was going through something after that, and I believe was the touchdown right after that, or was I think the touchdown play was in the third quarter.
Touchdown play was definitely in the third quarter.
So the 27-17 lead.
Him leaving the game preceded that, though.
Okay,
definitely.
He was
out of the game for a while before that happened.
He got hurt in the first quarter. Yeah. It was he had,
it looked bad.
He tackled, I think it was David Moore, pretty hard, and it was down for a while after that.
So maybe when we get the injury report from the Vikings today, he might be on it, and then we'll know exactly what he's dealing with. But overall, he wasn't dealing with anything that they made public before that game, and he's had issues. And so, Mike, how do you put that in context of what he said and the season that he's having?
I mean, you got to wonder if it's off-field stuff. You just don't know. I mean, nobody knows what anybody's dealing with necessarily unless it's made public. So it is alarming to see, though, and it's, you know, It's the single biggest difference in this defense right now. Like, you can't really say it any other way. I think like everything else is kind of the same, except they don't have this shutdown corner that he has been when he's been on, and that's what's keeping them probably from being, you know, from being a top five defense instead of, you know, looking like a 10 or 15 at a lot of times this year.
Well, and Ben, and it's seemingly making them play differently because you just wrote about how they played a lot of two deep shell defense against the Seahawks, a team that runs the ball more than all but two teams in the NFL.
Right.
And then Mike Zimmer comes out and says, yeah, I just thought they were going to pass on us more.
Well, and it was even interesting to hear him say that because, again, like you said, this is not, you're not dealing with the, you know, Buffalo Bills in the early 1990s or the K-Gun or something like that. Or even you're not dealing with the 2018 Vikings that throw the ball all the time.
Sure,
you know, take your pick, whoever you want to talk about, the Packers some years. You're dealing with a team that runs the ball an awful lot. And for him to say, I thought they'd throw it, that struck me as a bit of an admission that if I'm an opponent right now and I'm looking to attack my defense, that's where I'm looking.
Yep.
I'm looking initially to say I can get big plays on this defense and I'm going after that first.
And Mike wanted a guard against that. Zimmer did clearly in the Vikings game plan that they tried to put forth. And really, Russell didn't have this kind of explosive game.
Not so much.
Outside of the 60-yard touchdown, they held him in check. And actually, even with it, which, you know, I love people doing that game of just take that play away, and they did all right. Let's just say with it, they still were one of three teams, including Baltimore and San Francisco, to hold Wilson under 8 yards a throw.
Yeah.
So that might have been part of their game plan, not to test Daniil and test Everson Griffin and their offensive line, just get the ball out quicker. But that 60-yard touchdown that Rhodes was involved in, that he today just said, yes, it's all on me. I mean, that was a backbreaker.
Yeah, and we should, for context here, him saying it's all on me, I think is true. I mean, if you look at that play, we've all watched it probably a dozen times. It's certainly, he's turning around looking like he's expecting there to be somebody else back there, which Harrison Smith's pressed up on the line of scrimmage. They're in a double leg gap blitz look. So either Smith is trying to help with the disguise or he knows he's going to have to cover the running back leaking out of the backfield. In any case, he was not deep and would not have been in a position to probably get there.
And he was obviously not deep. That was the weird thing.
Right, and he's got a hamstring injury. It's not like you're expecting him to be 100% either. So I think it's probably true that it's his fault, but we also should mention, the only reason I bring this up is 2016, the last time that there was a very public sort of split
at Lambeau,
what Zimmer wanted versus what he did. You know, he kind of had to triangulate a little bit in the locker room and try to figure out How do I play this? And so I wonder if there was a little more discussion ahead of this today to say, okay, I'm going to put this on myself and let's quash that and take responsibility for it, which I think is probably the right thing to do. Is if you're trying to go out there and say, I'm going to be a leader, that's probably the right thing to do.
You think he took to coaching better Wednesday than he did on Monday?
Well, I certainly think there was probably a discussion of how to handle it today, yes. Yeah,
I think, too, that – I mean, we could probably count on one hand the amount of times that Harrison Smith's been in the wrong place in his career.
Yeah,
if you're just looking at the players and maybe who was in the wrong spot and Xavier just owning up to it, I'm inclined to believe him, even if it is a few days later and they can get a story straight or whatever. I just think overall that Xavier was directly asked, do you feel physically capable of playing up to the level that you were used to in 2017, that kind of all-pro level? And he said yes. So what's your level of confidence that this can get corrected? Because we should point out that the last 3 weeks, they have, or three of the last 4 weeks, they've played a top five offense, and their highest ranked offense they're going to face the rest of the way is currently Detroit.
Wow. Yeah. So
ahead of Green Bay.
Green Bay's 22nd.
Wow.
Yeah. This is totally ours. They're not that great right now.
Yeah. It's a weird thing. I do want to pivot back to what you see. You talk about the run defense, and that was, you know, I think there was a tendency after the game, and even just looking at all the questions we're getting, which we'll get to later, like there's so much Xavier Rhodes angst, pass defense angst right now. The run defense was terrible. And I imagine some of that, and Ben wrote about that. I imagine some of that is, you know, they had a certain game plan. They thought they could probably fit against the run better and hold up against the run better than they did. Seattle did things that maybe they didn't expect. They came out in that jumbo look so often, and they thought that, you know, shutting down Russell Wilson was more important than selling out to stop the run, which is a, you know, more or less a smart thing. But it is alarming to see them get run over like that, because that's a blueprint for failure down the stretch.
The snapshot of the game to me, I mean, there were two. The Rhodes play we've talked about, but the other one was on the Chris Carson 25-yard run. DJ Fluker puts Linval Joseph on his back, which we do not see happen hardly ever. And Linval came back from meniscus surgery that he told you after the game he'd been given a 6-week recovery timetable, so he's back in three. You have to account for that. But to see him get manhandled like that, and that was not the only time on Monday night that they sort of were able to move him where they wanted him to go, that was, I thought, pretty interesting in the fact that they had to – I mean, he played about 70% of the snaps, which is about where he's been all year, but they have tried to keep that in check given the fact he's been dealing with this knee issue, which means you're going to get more Jaleel Johnson. You're going to get more – I mean, Shamar Stephen plays a lot anyway, but Shamar Stephen's dealing with injuries. So their depth is being tested, and not having Linval out there being able to go 85, 90% of the snaps – I think does make a difference.
And this was a week after Fletcher Cox in Philadelphia destroyed the center of the Seahawks offensive line and had a very, very big game and one that Seattle only scored 17 points in. And the Vikings just couldn't do that kind of same thing up the middle to stop the run. And now Mike Zimmer said they ran to the perimeter a little more than we thought they would against us too, kind of running into the teeth of the Vikings defense with Hunter and Griffin on the edges. But still, Linval, I didn't go back and watch it fully yet, so I don't know, but when you give up that many yards on the ground, you can't imagine he's up to the level that he's used to playing.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly pressed the edges. I think I looked that up, and they had 100-something yards either running out basically to the tight end side on either side, or George Fant probably extra tackle in some cases, or to the right tackle. So they certainly were running outside zone quite a bit, which is interesting, too, that people are going to say, okay, we're going to run it at Danielle Hunter, which is not something you see a lot of teams try, but yes, they had some moments, especially on that big run with Carson, where they were able to get Joseph out of his spot.
Now, the Vikings and Mike Zimmer, they put so much confidence in their fact that they could stop. And, Ben, you pointed this out right away. They came open a nickel.
Yeah.
First four or five snaps in that game. And the Seahawks,
despite the heavy set,
the Seahawks ran. And even when Russell dropped back for the first time, he tucked the ball and ran, too, and didn't throw it. So they clearly came out. And I think it's important for Vikings fans to understand that they predicate this defense first and foremost on stopping the run.
Yes. Yeah, they did against Dallas, which was probably their most impressive run defense of the year, was shutting down Ezekiel Elliott.
But then they were
kind of
torched in the air and then had to hold on for dear life at the very end as Dak was throwing it into the end zone. So you wonder if that was kind of an overcorrection on Zimmer's part, thinking, hey, We could stop it with six guys up front. You know, let's just devote more to coverage and back him up. But his willingness to do that really speaks to the state of the coverage.
Well, yeah, and typically, I think ordinarily, Zimmer has said we're good enough against the run. And they had run defense issues early in his time here. But yeah, the last couple of years, they've
been fine.
More or less shored that up.
His linebackers were also, yeah, like Marvin Mitchell. Or do you mean like even a couple years ago?
Well, I think before 16 or 17, that sure. They had years where they were 25th against the run. Now, you know, some of that is circumstantial, and it's you can splice those numbers any way you want. But they have been better against the run, I think, in the last few years. And he probably is thinking, we are good enough up front. Because as you mentioned, you know, I remember when he first became the head coach, you know, he talked scheme with us as reporters. And one of the first things he said was, our linemen play blocks on the way to the quarterback. It's not your first job to go rush the passer. You are responsible for closing off the angles as much as you are getting around guys, so that if they do run, you're collapsing pockets, or you're collapsing fronts if they're running, you're collapsing pockets if the quarterback is trying to get out. So it's not the old way of doing things where it's just try to get around the guy as quick as you can. And playing the run is important for those guys. And the fact that they've developed that over the years, I think he probably has felt, okay, we have what we need up front to stop this, and we can devote more resources to coverage. If you're not completely healthy, if you're not defending the run as well, maybe that's not true, and you know, maybe what you need to devote to coverage has been more too, because you're worried about your coverage.
Yeah, I think the upshot here is that they used to be able to defend both, and they kind of have to pick now.
Well, and that's is that because people have figured them out? Is because you have players that aren't
that's
healthy? Is players getting older?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I don't know if there's like every team in the NFL can run on their nickel package. I don't think that's the case. I just think
that's
Seattle's
a unique challenge too.
But this is
Seattle's one of them.
It is, and this is the caliber of team you're going to see when it matters the most. Yep. Like, you know, if I don't like their chances if they have to go back to Seattle. I think Seattle could beat them by more next time. San Francisco, I think they could be in a game with San Francisco just because their offense isn't as explosive. But like, they're looking at a lot of possible tough matchups, even if they are able to get to the playoffs.
They are. On the way there, they're going to have to – well, it sounds like they're going to have Dalvin Cook, who's dealing with a clavicle, kind of collarbone, shoulder issue that he re-aggravated, first suffered against the Broncos a couple weeks ago, limited him in practice out of the bye week, and then, of course, he comes out Sunday night and hurts it twice. I don't want to say re-injures it, but hurts it twice. We heard from Dalvin today. Dalvin Cook said, hey, I've been told that I can't re-injure it. I'm going to play through it. I asked him, is it a pain tolerance issue? He said, primarily. This is something where it seems like while he might not get the full 80% workload that he's used to, it sounds like he's going to be out there on Sunday.
Which is a fantasy nightmare for me because I have Dalvin and Alexander Mattison right as we get into the playoffs.
Start both of them. Just put them both out.
Maybe
there.
I will. Maybe against Detroit I will. I don't know. But, you know, it's just my problems are small problems.
Nice work on the handcuff, though.
Thank you.
That was a shrewd pickup.
He's a Vikings fan. He gets
it. I'm a Rube. I'm a Rube. But, you know, something adding up to me tells me I don't think Dalvin's going to play Sunday. I don't know. He can say what he says. Zimmer said, we'll see how he looks out there today. Cousins said, it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to go out and do it. Something's just not adding up right to me. I don't think Dalvin's going to play Sunday.
I do wonder about that, and that's certainly a possibility when he's dealing with this, because if they view Alexander Mattison, very capable running back, very good at what he's done in short kind of scenarios and games, give him a full workload and see what he can do on Sunday against a really bad Lions defense, a defense that gave up 500 yards to the Vikings, 42 points. Dalvin Cook had a field day, I believe, against them at Ford Field. I think he had a really good game.
Yes, he did.
If I remember that one correctly. And Dalvin even smirked when I asked about, if you do play, do you expect to see more men in the box? And he said, if I don't, it's going to be a great day.
Yeah, but here's the thing, too, though. I mean, he at the end of Dalvin's thing, he talked about, you know, how he's got to work on gripping the ball tight with this injury. And I asked Zimmer, like, are you worried about ball security? He said, no, but both the plays that he hurt himself on, he fumbled.
Yeah, Dalvin
in that game. On Monday night, and he's put on the ground before. I mean,
he's had some fumbling history in his career.
But if this is an injury that's like, you know, to his, you know, the right upper part of his arm, like if it's impacting his ability to hold on to the ball, like that is the last thing you want in a game that you feel like you should go win, as someone worrying about someone, you know, not only getting injured, but, you know, putting the ball on the ground because you can't hold on to the ball.
Yeah, for all the Lions' deficiencies, they actually, on defense, they actually are one of the league leaders in forcing fumbles, too. And we all know when Dalvin tore his ACL, he just dropped the ball against the Lions in his rookie season, too. Mm-hmm. So Dalvin admitted, while Mike Zimmer wouldn't, that, yes, that's something he needs to focus on and do a lot better at, because when he takes a hit right there, as we saw
twice against
the Seahawks, it gets coughed up.
Yeah. The last time he ran for more than 100 yards actually was in that game against the Lions. 25 carries, which is the second most of the season. 142 yards, which is also his second most of the season, and two touchdowns on the ground that day.
Yeah, I can't imagine he gets 25 carries if he does play against this Detroit team just because of where he's at. I imagine he'll be limited in practices this week, if not being held out completely.
Yeah, that kind of what he made it sound like today, like, you know, rest it during the week and be good on Sundays. But, boy, I don't know.
Yeah, the one thing we can tell you is that we for sure do not expect a full workload for Dalvin Cook if he does play on Sunday. Vikings rushing attack, though, that's been the engine that's driven this offense.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think from Kirk Cousins, though, and what you saw from him Monday? Because we didn't get to talk to you after the game, Mike.
I was more or less encouraged. I mean, it felt like we were kind of headed towards one of those, like, you know, honestly, until the fourth quarter, they only scored 10 points on offense. And it kind of seemed like the defense was still going to be driving the narrative, but they, you know, the offense had also given them a couple of short fields with, you know, the interception off of Diggs' hands and the fumble from Cook that cost him 3 points. So it was looking like the kind of game where the offense hadn't done much, and then, you know, the two touchdowns they score late, you know, one is a busted coverage, one is aided by pass interference. I wasn't, like, overjoyed by how they played. I think it was a missed opportunity to really change the narrative. Like, if you go out and score a touchdown and you steal that game, you know, on that last drive where, you know, he's got 3 minutes. His command of the situation seemed a little off to me. They get that first down to, I think it was Rudolph on that last drive. And then he, like, runs up to the line. Like, you got 3 minutes there. Like, chill, man. Like, they throw a quick incompletion. Doesn't seem like everybody's on the same page. All of a sudden, you get to fourth down. I don't think he made the right read there. Like, it was a... That drive was still a little unsettling to me, but if you're talking about who to blame in that game, he's pretty far down on the list. I thought he played above average.
That's the double-edged sword there to the no huddle. And they went to it on the 58-yard touchdown. It seemed to get the Seahawks confused.
Sure.
The defense's wires crossed a little bit. So maybe he's thinking that too.
He might have. Yeah, that's – yeah.
Even though it was a deal where they could have burned the last 3 minutes and still won by ending with a touchdown, he hurried up to the line, and that didn't quite help them there. But – I thought overall Mike Zimmer was asked about Kirk, was very complimentary of Kirk, but then I decided on Tuesday to ask him about the play call and that fourth down, and could anything have been done differently there? And he just said, well, Kirk could have moved his feet until someone got open.
Sounds like an evaluation of a player in the media, doesn't it?
It does, as Mike says today when asked about Xavier. He doesn't want to evaluate players in the media. But he had said that...
Evaluating Xavier at the owners' meetings.
He said, well, that's after the season. He'll do that. It's always December, though, isn't it, when he's just, like, shutting her
it's
down?
It's like one day of the week, and then he'll get back to it another time.
That's also
true. Kind of just let him say it. I mean,
they'll beat Detroit by 20, and then he'll be like, yeah, so-and-so.
I thought he did great.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to end that I lost my train of thought. What was I talking about?
We're talking about Cousins and moving.
Thank you.
The evaluation of him.
Mike Zimmer talked about how Cousins, all he could have done differently there was just moved his feet until someone got open, but we saw Kurt Warner, Matt Bowen. We saw players vocal, guys who know what they're talking about, vocal on social media saying, what was that play call?
Yeah, it was a strange first read. What was the difference was man versus zone. If you had a zone, maybe that play to Irv Smith works.
Bowen said that was the case.
And that's
clear out the zone.
You know, you're fourth and three. I guess they had timeouts left at that point. So you don't want to use one there probably because you're thinking, okay, we've still got a chance to get the ball back. If you don't get him and you get a stop, but they didn't seem like they had the perfect play called. I don't think he made the right read. I mean, that's a tough 3 yards to get. I mean, you can dissect everything after the fact. There was some ESPN Next Gen stuff showing like Alexander Mattison was kind of open on for 5 yards, pretty easy 5 yards over the middle. But again, I don't know what Kirk is seeing. Maybe there's linemen there that you don't see in the Next Gen stats, things like that. But it's, you know, I don't think that was the right read, and I don't know if it was the right play.
It was a quick throw. It was one he locked onto.
He threw it.
and it was one that seemingly he must have thought he had the right read there.
I don't even know if that would have been a first down if he would have caught it.
No, I think it would have been. Irv drove his route ahead of the sticks. Because I was like thinking, like, did the rookie make a wrong route turn, do something wrong? I mean, these untrained eyes, it didn't really seem that way. But in general, I just think that when you talk about a Seahawks team that, at least in the past, maybe they have a tendency to play a lot of zone, and maybe that's what that play call was trying to be predicated on.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seemed like one of those where you could have been maybe betting on that if they're in their cover three stuff that they typically are. But on fourth and two with the game on the line, I mean, wouldn't you think they're just lining up saying, go cover your guy, knock the ball out, and the game's over?
Who knows? And we'll never know, maybe. But the Vikings go into this game on Sunday against the Lions. Let's talk about this matchup quick before we take Twitter questions. Matt Patricia could be coaching for his job in only his second season. They are eliminated from playoff contention. The Lions are 3-8-1. They are one of six teams eliminated from the playoffs already, and of those six teams, three of them are the only ones that have given up more yards than the Lions. I believe the Bengals, Cardinals, and Dolphins. This defense that they've had is a sieve, and it's supposed to be Matt Patricia's pride and joy.
Didn't they start like
they started 2-0-1? Yeah, they were. I thought they were going to be kind of dangerous. Yeah. Like they played teams tough early.
Now Matthew Stafford's been out for, I believe this will be his fourth week. Yeah. Jeff Driscoll had to start a couple times. David Blau comes in there, makes his first NFL start. His first NFL completion was a 75-yard touchdown to Kenny Galladay. They've got great wide receivers, and I thought one of the funnier parts of Mike Zimmer's press conference was he said, yeah, we'd like to cover Marvin Jones this time.
They've lost eight of their last nine. The last time they won was October 27th at home against the Giants. Not exactly a win to hang your hat on.
And perhaps the worst part about their loss on Thanksgiving Day was it wasn't the young rookie quarterback who ended it for you. It was the fact that they had just surrendered a season-high 338 yards to Mitchell Trubisky, who's been struggling himself. And I went back and looked at it. That's the second most Trubisky's ever thrown for, behind only a game last year against the Lions.
Trubisky's having a very nice 2013 Ponder season.
Yeah, I mean, not far off, right?
Sort of backdoor, keep yourself employed in the NFL if you're not going to be your team starter
maybe
anymore.
Maybe sneak into the playoffs.
You know, a year before, a surprising playoff season.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
But without Josh Freeman.
Without Josh Freeman, we can't
tell him you thought he did a good job. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, the Lions don't have much to play for. I mean, I think Kirk Cousins is trying to tell us, like, you know, you'd be dumb to overlook these guys, things like that. But
was the wording childish?
Childish and immature.
He said it'd be immature if anybody overlooked him on their own team. And he pointed to, I thought it was interesting, as you said, the Broncos game and then the Bills game last year.
Yeah, I mean, those are the two that spring to mind. Like, the last thing you want to do in this game is to get into a situation where it's like, you know, 13-10 in the late in the third quarter, and like anything can happen. You get a bad special teams play. Oh, by the way, special teams was awful the other night too. I'm sure you guys touched on that on the post game podcast. But
maybe
that was
a backup quarterback with something to prove that wants to come in.
The Kyle Sloter revenge game too. That's a fun narrative.
We need a subplot this week, and boy, that would be a juicy one.
We're all one injury away from Kyle Sloter throwing against this Vikings defense in a real NFL game. He's never played in a real NFL game before.
He suited up.
One that counts. Oh, he has. You're right.
Yeah,
but
he was a backup for the first half of 2017.
But he's never actually been in the game and thrown an NFL pass. Imagine it being at US Bank Stadium where he was throwing touchdowns in the preseason. It really could be something. I asked Matt Patricia, you know, what do you do with your team now with a month left? Like, what do you try to do? He pointed to they have a lot of work to do on defense. And so the Vikings can turn on the film and see all these holes. But really, I think the thing they got to worry about in this matchup is not the fact that they're going to be playing against David Blau and an offense that might not be up to the caliber it is with Matthew Stafford. It's they have not stopped Kenny Galladay and Marvin Jones recently.
No, they haven't. And certainly Marvin Jones that last game was about as – that was probably as big of a outburst by a receiver against them as we've seen in a while. I mean, reminiscent in some ways of some of the things that Calvin Johnson used to do. Although they had quite a bit of success against Calvin Johnson a lot of
times, thinking the
too.
Bears receivers.
Yeah,
when Jeffrey and Marshall were there.
The famous find number 21 and throw it at him game. Jay Cutler just, hey, where's Josh Robinson? Okay, I'm going here.
He just retired recently.
He did.
Yeah, he was down in Jacksonville, I think.
Being able to run a 4.38 40 gets you a long ways.
Oh, and he made a career as a specialist. He was a good specialist. But yeah, anyway, they have not been able to stop those guys. Marvin Jones and Kenny Galladay lead the NFL each individually with 9 receiving touchdowns apiece. 4 of those coming against the Vikings for Marvin Jones. Kenny Galladay, too, can make David Blough look like a good quarterback. I mean, he's one of the better receivers in the NFL right now.
Kenny Galladay.
What's up, Ben? Is this your fantasy football?
Yes, yeah, I had him last year, and he did nothing, and now he's got 9 touchdowns. The breakout came a year too late.
I've got Marvin Jones this year, so I'm not sweating it.
Let me ask you then for something relevant. Are you sweating it this Sunday against the Vikings?
I mean, it's probably not the greatest matchup in the world, given what they've been through at quarterback. I think Marvin was a little bit more reliable early in the year. But you know what? It's just, again, like the Vikings got to 8-3 and got to the bye. And I think, you know, I think there was not necessarily an assumption, but that the playoffs were kind of this expectation at that point. And they've got some work to do here. I don't think they can rest on any of these games. I mean, Detroit should be a win, and I would imagine it will be. But, you know, the last 3 weeks, like, weird stuff can happen in any of those last 3 games against, you know, at L.A., home against Green Bay, and then home against Chicago. Like, Chicago, like, it's got a little bit of resurgence to them. I don't, you know, I wouldn't want to be going into that game having to beat Chicago to make the playoffs. So it's kind of an odd vibe right now, where I feel like they've done a good job of kind of being resilient this year, but that, you know, the everything they want to accomplish, there's still a lot left to be done.
All right, let's on that note, let's take some Twitter questions. Beef Brewski.
Great. Just followed me, by the way.
Fans are reactionary beasts, but is there any sense that Mike Zimmer is actually on the hot seat? And then also related, what does Kevin Stefanski's future look like in Minnesota?
Boy, we're coming out firing.
We are, yeah. Double guns.
Mike Zimmer's future in Minnesota.
Is there any sense that he's actually on the hot seat? Besides the fact that they didn't extend him before the season.
There's that. I think the only way that he's not back is if they miss the playoffs at this point. I certainly think there's a pretty good chance he's not here. If they lose their first playoff game, are the Wolves starting to get impatient with the lack of success in the playoffs, given all the resources they've invested and how long they've waited? Maybe. I guess I have a hard time seeing that, too. I think they would make the case, because he and Rick Spielman are certainly tied to the hip, both contractually and probably symbolically, because Rick Spielman hired him. I think they would make the case that, hey, we figured things out, we're close, we just need to make some adjustments, and we'll be right there. And whether that works or not, we'll see. But I think the only way the seat is really hot is if they don't make the playoffs.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. It just feels like you look at, you know, the 8-4 right now. Playoffs are still likely even after that loss to Seattle. You finish 10-6, 11-5. You know, it's a tough conference this year. I think if they play reasonably well in the playoffs, even if that's not the goal, everybody's just kind of synced up right now. It's hard to imagine, like, turning this whole thing over, given, you know, Kirk Cousins still has a $31 million guarantee next year. It just kind of feels like next year would be a total wash if they tried to do anything different with Zimmer and Spielman.
And it'd be sort of a weird job to take.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
If you're replacing, I mean, let's run through it. If you replaced Zimmer only, then you have Spielman trying to hire a new coach when his own future is up in the air, and you have a new coach that is playing with this quarterback that you may or may not like. And I think Cousins probably has answered a lot of those questions this year and maybe has built himself a future here, but it's not a guy you drafted. It's maybe not the easiest thing to work with. So there's that. If you get rid of Spielman and keep Zimmer, then Zimmer's coaching for a guy that didn't hire him, and how does that relationship work? And if you blow everybody out, then you have somebody coming in to take this job, and you're saying, okay, everybody's brand new, GM and coach. You have a quarterback that you have to make a decision on after year one, and a lot of these veterans that have contracts you have to make decisions on. It's not a team that needs a rebuild, but how would you play that? It would be an odd situation to walk into.
When's the last time a coach got fired after a winning season?
Well, Mike Tice.
It's happened.
Well, Lovie Smith fired 10-6 for the Bears like a decade ago, whenever that was, but more than a decade ago now.
Didn't Norv Turner get fired after a winning season in San Diego?
And that was just, playoff letdown after playoff
letdown. Schottenheimer has had that. I mean, you can go through some of those.
Tice was 9-7 when they fired him and hired Childress. But
Yeah, they didn't.
They didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, they never did much with Tice, though, did they? I mean, they had the.
Yeah, they only made the playoffs.
The playoffs in 04.
Yeah, made the playoffs in 04.
They had the one playoff win.
Yeah, beat the Packers, but then tried the fake punt. Yeah, fake field goal.
Nobody will get that.
Right.
We like Tice story.
Tice was the best.
The Mike Tice
you guys,
jokes.
I'm sad that you guys never really got to cover because that was magnificent.
Anyway, I just think it would be rare to see, like, even if they went 9-7, let's say 10-6, and somehow missed the playoffs if the Rams go undefeated the rest of the way. I don't know, but. There's that off chance that happens, and we could see a rare change, but it would be a rare change given the success and record that they would have this year.
Is Stefanski in the mix at all if that happens?
To be the head coach here?
Yeah.
I think he'd be in the mix, yeah. Okay. I mean, I think he'd get an interview. Okay. He's well-liked in the building. He is well-liked around the league. I think everything I've heard about how he interviewed in Cleveland last year was very positive. He's seen as a smart guy that's well-prepared, that's going to get an opportunity. And he's well-connected in the sense that you now have Gary Kubiak vouching for him. You have Brad Childress, who has been around the league enough and has enough tentacles around the league. He knows Andy Reid probably through Brad Childress. And his agent, Jimmy Sexton, is one of the more powerful coaching agents in the NFL. So. And agents have an awful lot to do with how those things get done. Maybe even more so with coaches than players. The agent function as matchmaker/kingmaker in these things is not talked about enough, and it absolutely matters. I think that's part of the reason Stefanski got that door kicked open for him last year is Jimmy Sexton, and I believe Jimmy Haslam, the Browns owner, have a good relationship. And that certainly worked in Kevin Stefanski's favor. Now, it sounded like he did very well with it, but it's like anything. A lot of it is who you know and how the door gets open and what you do with it after that is up to you. But, yes, I think he will have opportunities, and I think he's done enough this year to probably give himself a chance to sit down for a few head coaching jobs with owners.
To be clear, I think Zimmer is going to be the coach here next year and then for the foreseeable future. But,
I do too.
But if something went askew, the one way you could imagine them piecing together some kind of continuity is Stefanski becomes head coach or Spielman stays and you just kind of rebuild on the defensive side.
All right, we got a question from Carl. He's hooked on a feeling. He wants to know how's Thielen feeling.
That's pretty like Dr. Seuss.
I like it. I don't know. Hamstrings are tricky, as Dalvin Cook will tell you.
Had a big sleeve on it today.
Yeah, Ben, you reported about the setback last week. Just tell us what you know from the last week about what he's going through.
Yeah, I mean, they went into last week with every intention of him coming back, and they brought him out there. They practiced, had a light practice on Tuesday. They went outside in cooler weather. I think it was probably in the 30s. They went out there. He was, from what I understand, just running a route, trying to open it up, and he had a setback. I mean, it kind of tweaked on him. And he said later in the week, if I'm not 100%, I'm not going out there. And at the time, I kind of thought he got asked how the hamstring was doing. And he said, it's getting there. And he did not say, it's 100%. I'm ready to go. But, you know, you kind of think, okay, he's had enough time. He's probably going to play. I mean, you never know if people are being completely forthright with everything in terms of their condition. But, even that at the time, looking back on it, kind of made me think, that's an odd thing to say if you're then going to say that you're not going to play unless you're 100%.
Do we know if setback means kind of all the way back to where you started or somewhere in the middle or kind of what's the severity of the setback?
My understanding, I don't think it's all the way back to where he started.
Because he didn't miss a whole practice at all.
He missed Wednesday. But they didn't
I
have
forgot
an injury report.
Okay.
But Friday and Saturday.
That's right.
If you hear us make this mistake, we live on a Sunday to Sunday schedule, and every time there's a game that's a different day, we start just colloquially referring to days of the week incorrectly because we're so in the same.
We'll do it again
setup.
In a few weeks when they play on Monday.
Yeah, Friday is Saturday and all of that kind of stuff. But he practiced Friday, Saturday, and I think was limited in both of those. But, yeah, he did miss Wednesday.
All right, well, we'll have to see what his practice availability or schedule, is like this week and determining, seeing whether or not they're going to put him out there. Because as Adam has said over and over, he's not going to play unless it's fully healed. All right, Mike Eric asks, how does Michael feel about this Gophers wins versus Vikings wins bet? Looks like it's going to come down to the wire.
I've been nervous all year, basically, just because even though the Gophers jumped out to this lead in the taco bet, it's been... It's been a lot of fun, first of all, because like both teams have been, I would say, better than expected, especially the Gophers were, and I think the Vikings are better than I expected them to be. Like, when we talked about this bet early in the year, I was like, yeah, I'm kind of going at this like, I hope we'll win. I hope I win 7-6 or 8-7, or, you know, maybe, you know, best case scenario, like 9-8. I did not think that both these teams would be in double digits, which we're probably going to get to at this point. So my best guess right now is that this is going to be a taco push.
Taco push?
11-11.
What do we do then?
We all eat tacos.
Double or nothing. just
double or nothing on next year, maybe. I don't know. We'll have to see.
You think the Gophers win this bowl game that they're going to get down in Florida?
I think
Florida,
so, because all the projections I see, a lot of them, like Tennessee makes a lot of sense. I think they could beat Tennessee. If they end up playing like Auburn, like, never mind. Never mind,
no,
if,
Chip's
it's, never mind if it's Auburn. Hey, but, you know, I feel like expecting the Gophers, like, the Gophers probably have like a 50-50 chance of winning a bowl game, especially if it's someone like a Tennessee. And I'd say the Vikings going 2-2 or 3-1 in these last four is a pretty good bet. So I'd say a tie at 10 or a tie at 11 is not out of the question.
Now, if they're in a bowl game with Tennessee and it's Tennessee's down 3 points late,
uh-huh,
and you got a 4th-and-1 on the 33 yard line, do you kick it or do you say to yourself, we got to go?
Gotta go.
We gotta go.
It was a long setup. But
that was good. It reminds me of a text chain I'm on with a group of friends of mine, all of us Gopher alums, and one of them had to miss the game, couldn't watch the game because he'd like signed up like 2 months ago to go to a children's play, Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus, with all of his kids. So he comes back and we're all texting him, like asking him what he thought of the play, and he said, you know, it's probably just as well that I didn't get to see that game, you know. At least I didn't have to watch PJ Fleck punt on 4th-and-2 from the 35. Yeah. At least the pigeon wasn't afraid to drive the bus.
Oh, jeez.
Or row the boat.
Or row the boat for that
form of transportation.
Well, Mike, we have a brief Chicken Fingers statement of the week. Just talking about his time in Seattle.
Is that all we're getting? It's just his transportation update?
I think
you could have typed another sentence.
He said, I will quickly say that Seattle fans are pretty nice. I did everything to get them going. I disparaged throwing fish and Soundgarden and John Ratzenberger, and they did nothing.
John Ratzenberger from Seattle?
Unfazed, those Seahawks. We'll have to see if that's the case, if the Vikings go back there in the NFC playoffs or not. Please check back to our Star Tribune podcast and all the Star Tribune work we do at, if you can guess it, StarTribune.com.
Maybe you should get off the podcast.